to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
2025. I'm Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. This week on the show, we share a clip from a recent episode of the Courage My Friends series featuring co-executive director of the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change, Karen Koch, advocacy and media relations coordinator at the Refugee Center in Montreal, Alina Murad, and president of the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers, Aisling Bondi. The three join Courage My Friends series host Resh Bedou to discuss Prime Minister Mark Carney's new border security acts, Bill C-2, and its questionable makeover with the recently tabled Bill C-12, and how they effectively rewrite Canada's approach to refugee rights and protections. If passed, what will these acts mean for those seeking asylum, and for Canada as a whole? Here is a small clip from that conversation. Take a listen.
Karen, Aisling, and Alina, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Karen, tell us about yourself and the Migrant Workers Alliance.
Hi, thanks. My name is Karen Koch, and I'm co-executive director of the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change. We are a membership-based organization of migrants working in farm and fisheries and food processing, care work, current or international students, and undocumented migrants who are working in a number of sectors, but primarily in food service and in healthcare. And we also are the secretariat of the Cross-Country Migrant Rights Network.
Thank you so much. And Ashling, you're joining us from the CARL, where you are president. So tell us more about that.
Yes, I'm president of the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers, or CARL. We were founded in 2011, and we're an association of lawyers across Canada and law students practicing in the field of refugee law. Our organization is very active in litigation and advocacy on issues affecting refugees and other vulnerable migrants. And also we provide education and other resources and supports to our members. On a personal level myself, I've been practicing in the field of immigration and refugee law since 2007.
Lovely. Thank you so much. And Alina, tell us about yourself and the Refugee Center.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah, my name is Alina Murad. I am the advocacy coordinator at Le Centre Refugié, or the Refugee Center. We're based in Montreal, and we provide wraparound holistic support for primarily asylum seekers, but people of all newcomer backgrounds. And we do have a full service legal aid clinic, as well as a number of other great departments that help our clients along the way with their resettlement journey.
Thank you. And again, welcome to all of you. So this past June, the Government of Canada under Prime Minister Mark Carney introduced Bill C-2, the Strong Borders Act, which has just undergone a bit of a transformation, which we will get to. But Karen, give us an overview of the content of the original Bill C-2.
The original Bill C-2 was this sort of monstrous Frankenstein omnibus bill that contained changes to a number of different pieces of legislation, everything from the Oceans Act to the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, and a number of other pieces of legislation, including the Drug Registry Act and a few others. And basically what C-2 did, it was called the Stronger Borders Act, but what it was intended to do was to supposedly strengthen the border in order to crack down on the flow of illicit drugs and on migrants and fraudulent or the financing of drugs and money laundering, and to supposedly tighten up or fix the immigration system. So it included everything from giving Canada Post the ability to open people's mail, new warrantless data access powers for government agencies, the ability to be able to force, for example, cell phone providers or internet providers to change their backend systems so that government agencies can more easily access people's search history and data, information sharing between government agencies and foreign entities, and obviously the concern that we have all here today, but a number of significant changes to IRPA, the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act. The three kind of top level ones that were a major concern was putting an arbitrary 1-year time limit on the ability to be able to apply to put a refugee claim in. So once a person had been in Canada for over a year, they could no longer apply for refugee status. A closing of the 14-day window because of the Safe Third Country Agreement, migrants cannot come and claim asylum from the United States unless they cross between official ports of entry and can stay undetected for 14 days. And so that was what was happening at Roxham Road and across the border, the land border in Manitoba, for example, of people crossing and trying to remain undetected to be able to then claim asylum coming from the U.S., the closing of that 14-day window. And what was a particular concern for us in terms of the volumes of people that would be affected was granting the minister the ability to cancel or suspend immigration permits or applications. So that could be everything from visitors' visas to study permit applications to PR applications, to be able to cancel them or suspend them en masse and without access to due process. Same with the asylum questions. So it was really an omnibus bill that was framed as trying to tighten up the border and trying to tighten up the immigration system as a response to Donald Trump's tariffs.
CARL issued a statement warning about changes to the refugee claims process, as Karen just described, that, to quote you, Ashling, will have a disproportionate impact on vulnerable groups, including women who have experienced gender-based violence and members of the LGBTQ plus community. So could you tell us more about these concerns and how it would disrupt the claims process from the perspective of CARL?
Yes, we feel that these groups are disproportionately impacted because there are a lot of circumstances in which someone might enter Canada and not make their claim within a year from those communities. For example, members of the LGBTQ community, let's say someone is coming to Canada as an international student when they're 18 years old from a country where being LGBTQ is very much repressed. They might not yet be aware of their sexual identity. You know, they come to Canada, they study for 2 or 3 years and then come out, right? They realize they're LGBTQ and that they will be at risk if they return to their country. And they go to make a claim at that time, they cannot do so. They're banned and for life at that point. It's not a question of they can leave and return. It's not 1 year from your last entry. It's 1 year from the first time you entered Canada ever. So from that point forward, that person can never for the rest of their life make a refugee claim in Canada.
So that's completely new.
Very much so. Yes, that is completely new. There's nothing like that before in refugee law. I mean, certainly if there's a delay in claiming, that can be considered as a factor at your hearing. That's something right now you would make your claim, you'd go to an oral hearing and the member would ask about it and the person would have the opportunity to explain. You know, I came to Canada when I was 18. I hadn't really thought much about romantic partners and I'm from a place where people don't speak openly about being LGBTQ. It was only when I was in Canada, I was 20 and I started realizing this, for example. They could explain all that at their hearing. If this bill passes, no, they're just barred. They're banned from making an asylum claim and leaving Canada and returning is not a cure. It's not from your last entry. It's 1 year ever. And so very much that community could be impacted. Similarly, women fearing gender-based violence. It could be, you know, a woman who comes to Canada who was abused back home because of the trauma. It could take more than a year for her to come forward with her claim. But also a scenario that I see is a woman might come to Canada as a worker, as an international student, they're here with temporary status. While in Canada, they enter a romantic relationship with someone from their country of nationality, or maybe they even travel to Canada with the abusive partner. Person becomes abusive in Canada. They're charged in Canada, the abusive partner, for the abuse and end up being deported because of the charges. And the partner will say, I blame you. They'll say to the woman here, I blame you. I am being deported and it's your fault. And the moment you get back home, I will exact my revenge on you and the police back home will not do anything. Maybe in Canada I was arrested, but when you get home, I will not. And I will retaliate against you there. And so the woman will make a refugee claim saying, if I am deported home, if I return home, I am in danger. And she is banned right now because if she entered Canada for the first time more than a year ago, she cannot make that claim. She is banned from doing so and doesn't even have that opportunity to explain what happened and the reasons that she didn't make the refugee claim within a year of her first entry to Canada. And again, it's a lifelong ban.
So from the advocacy and services side, Alina, what are the fears around Bill C-2?
That's a great question. I mean, there are many, many fears. A first one would be, as my colleagues already mentioned briefly, the lack of due process that this bill is working towards, right? So throughout the immigration sections of this bill, we see that there's a shift towards a pre-removal risk assessment based procedure. This pre-removal risk assessment is only given to people who are found ineligible, people who have a removal notice. And it's very, very important to note here that it is very, very different from an oral hearing. It's a paper-based process. And so what this bill is essentially forcing people to do is give up their right to an oral hearing. And as Ashlyn was just saying, you will not have these opportunities to clarify questions about whether it's your sexuality or whatever else it is. When you are submitting a pre-removal risk assessment application, they look for very, very different things than what they do in an oral hearing. They're looking for a basis of which you would be in danger if you were to be removed. And that is very different from what you would disclose in an oral hearing. That would be, you know, what is the basis for your claim? Why are you claiming refugee status, right? So this really does hinder a huge portion of the demographic that we serve. I mean, PROS would be given to people who are deemed ineligible under the Safe Third Country Agreement. Under this bill, it would be under the 1 year ban, the 14-day closure, and those who are found ineligible without the right to appeal. So it's a huge, huge portion of people would be forced purely just through a paper-based process in this system. And this is, of course, a huge concern for service providers. How can we best equip our clients to be ready for this process, especially considering that there's a timeline of 15 days to submit the application? There's a lot of barriers that come with this. for example, knowledge of the system, language ability, your digital literacy, your ability to find a lawyer, especially one with a legal aid mandate. I mean, the concerns go on, but this is definitely a huge root of the concerns for service providers.
Absolutely. And we saw the expression of these concerns because upon its introduction, the Strong Borders Act immediately met with overwhelming dissent from civil rights groups right across the country. And by the time it got to its second reading, a press conference on behalf of a broad coalition of over 300 of these groups was held on Parliament Hill demanding the withdrawal of C2. Karen, you were one of the main speakers at this press conference. So could you speak to the mobilization that came out of it?
Yeah, what happened when the bill was first tabled, I mean, it kind of took us all by surprise because we have to remember it was first tabled at the beginning of June. You know, Mark Carney's government was not even 2 months old at that time. So this was the first significant piece of legislation that the government tabled, which was not anything that the government campaigned on, that he campaigned on or the Liberals campaigned on. So it really surprised folks in this area of work who work with migrants. And the outrage, like you said, was very swift. So as the Migrant Rights Network, we started drafting a statement. We connected with the Canadian Council for Refugees and the International Civil Liberties Monitoring Group to address both the civil liberties, the data privacy and the surveillance concerns, as well as the immigration concerns. And while we were in the process of drafting a very short statement and getting endorsements, statements were popping up from all corners. So by the time we actually got around to doing our press conference on June 18th, over 300 organizations represented about three different statements that had come out. So from the settlement sector, a statement that was led by OCASI, and our statement, as well as the statement coming out from civil liberties, data privacy folks. And by the time we made it to the press conference, there was another statement from feminist organizations and groups that work on gender-based violence. There was another statement from the health sector and people who support folks who have precarious status and are dealing with health issues. And that was led by the HIV Legal Network. So it was really just an outpouring of criticism and concern to this bill because of the sweeping powers that the bill would give on many fronts to the government, but also the ways that it would shrink due process across all fronts, the way that none of it was evidence informed. For example, some of the measures meant in C2 to quote unquote stem the flow of illicit fentanyl across the border to the US. Well, that illicit flow of fentanyl across the border to the US doesn't actually exist. It's not real in the facts and in reality.
Even the US Customs and Border Patrol said it's something like 0.7 or 0.4, some really negligible amount.
Yeah, it's totally negligible. It's not a thing. C2 was so clearly a response to Donald Trump and to the tariffs. And that justification was used as an opportunity to kind of ram in a bunch of things that I think from across a number of different departments people were wanting. So the Canadian Association of Police Chiefs, for example, has come out in favor of all versions of C2. There was a push from CBSA for more money for border enforcement. There was a push from CSIS to get more access to data and stuff. So it was really using this political moment to try and push through a bunch of things that served other agendas that I think really raised the ire of a number of different organizations. And what was interesting about the mobilization is that, and I think Alina and Ashling can speak to this, you know, folks who do like the migrant rights sort of stuff, we don't usually work with people who do internet data privacy or even civil liberties that affect specifically Canadians in terms of data privacy or access to cash or, you know, so because it was so sweeping, this bill, it brought together folks from all walks of Canadian civil society or what have you. And so now it kind of generated this coalition, this broad network of organizations that Carl is in, that the Refugee Center is in, over 70 organizations that are meeting on a biweekly basis, strategizing about how to defeat this bill, strategizing about how to put pressure on the government, and reaching a very broad audience, very broad and diverse audience of Canadians and also of migrants to raise concern about this and speaking across the issues, having people from open media talking about data privacy, but raising concerns about the immigration changes is very powerful.
And not only did the Strong Borders Act, as you said, spark incredible dissent from civil society groups, but opposition parties, the Conservatives, the Bloc, the NDP, the Green, said they would not support it for various reasons, right? Which is not a good position for a new minority government to be in. So in response, the Liberals said they would bring in a new bill. And on October 8th, 2 days before we're recording this interview, they've tabled Bill C-12, the Strengthening Canada's Immigration System and Borders Act. So, Aisling, take it from here. What's happening now and what's changed?
Yes, so this is quite new. What it looks like, C-12 is essentially the same bill, but some of the privacy sections that the Conservatives said they would not support have been removed. The immigration and refugee side is essentially unchanged. I was at a meeting yesterday with several lawyers, and we were going through the C-2 and C-12 wordings and looking for any changes, and we couldn't find anything material. I don't know if someone's popped up a change of a word or two here and there, but so far we haven't seen anything. So it really seems like it is the same bill. The purpose of C-12, my understanding, is so that they can pass all of the parts of it that the Conservatives support, because they need the support of at least one more party. So they think that they can at least get that through quickly. Initially, when this was announced that there was going to be a new bill, our understanding was, okay, so they're going to withdraw C-2 and pass C-12. But now we find out they're going to keep C-2 moving along so that they can still try to pass those privacy aspects that the Conservatives won't support, somehow get them through. But the differences between C-2 and C-12 are not immigration refugee focus, because they have the support from the Conservatives, it seems, to pass that. It's really on the privacy side. So my understanding is being able to check people's mail without a warrant and some other data surveillance aspects, but refugee is the same. And unfortunately, when we first heard, oh, there's a new bill, we heard the Conservatives won't support C-2, this is great, maybe it won't pass, and we heard there's gonna be a new version, okay, maybe they're gonna, you know, make some of the refugee aspects less bad. And then we find out, no, everything's the same. And this is really just a way to get it through faster. And so this actually entirely is a rather unfortunate development.
So C-12 could act as a clearing path for C-2?
Yeah, basically C-12 is all the aspects of C-2 that the Conservatives will vote for. At least that's our understanding, right? Because what Pierre Poilievre publicly said, I don't support these things, I won't vote for C-2. Quickly, there's a new version of the bill. So our understanding is they know the Conservatives will vote for what's in C-12, so it can move through more quickly. And probably what they'll do then is amend C-2 to delete all the sections that were in C-12 and just try to find a way to get those other ones passed. But ultimately, it doesn't directly impact refugees, other than the fact the provisions relating to privacy can impact them in the same way it would impact anyone else in Canada. But the refugee sections are the same. It's just a new bill so that the Conservatives will vote for it. And then they'll have the support they need to get it through the House.
Interesting. Okay, so let's get into the wider context. And we've already started to talk about it, but let's really get into it. So when introducing the Strong Borders Act, the original, Minister of Public Safety Gary Anandasangari said that it was, quote, to ensure Canada's law enforcement is equipped with the tools they need to stay